I call dibs on good cop.
Oh, so
I'm good cop.
So does that mean I'm bad cop?
Yes, you're bad cop. I'm tired, so I'm going to be good cop.
Okay.
I'm not going to be interrupting you that much on this one.
Oh, okay.
That's me.
Bless you.
Officer Lehan, good cop.
Good. Woo!
The best bits. I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
You are stupid, you have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello.
I can't be good cop. It just doesn't feel right. I've got to be bad cop. I'm sorry.
Okay, be bad cop. Be bad cop.
All right. Okay.
Hello.
Because I just like interrupting you. Oh. It makes me feel alive.
Well, if that's what your solar power is, if that's what's giving you the juice, I'll allow you.
Everybody knows what the intro to the episode is.
Hello, Poxy Kevin.
Well, maybe I don't, so I like reading it.
I know that's true.
I do know it every now and again. Sometimes I'm on the toilet and it comes to me and I'm just sitting there contemplating my life and the decisions I've made.
Like
and
all of a sudden... Best Bits!
And welcome to the Best Bits! A movie podcast where we pick our favourite
scenes from randomly selected
really specific
themes. This is your course, Will! Writer of three films plus a Star Wars. And I'm joined once again by... Hold on. Writer...
That's a double flusher.
Of one of the big films. And we're changing this.
Four and a bit episodes of TV.
Four and a bit episodes of TV.
Four,
hold
get
a second.
It right.
Hold on a second. Four and a bit episodes of TV. Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Now I understand why the Examiner said that we are a carefree podcast because we don't give a shit.
We actually could record this on the toilet. We probably could.
I've done it before, many a times.
Yeah. Guess which episode?
Sex scenes.
Hey, we're here to talk about best buddy comedy scenes, aren't we?
Yeah.
Thank you, Jesus.
Do you know what I learned?
What?
Because I was looking up, you know, a few minutes ago there, doing my research.
What?
I got it all done. Mm-hmm. Ready for the test. The difference between a buddy comedy and a rom-com is sex.
Sex. I was going to say, yeah, sex.
Sex.
It's just, they're very, very close. They're very, very close in subgenre.
They're both
types.
About intimacy, but there's not a consummation with a buddy comedy. And I go, oh my God. So it is that simple. It's basically the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Complementary characters who are antagonistic to one another, who come to a greater understanding of themselves and each other, and they're more intimate with each other. That's what a buddy comedy is.
But you know what? I think in every buddy comedy movie, there's the equivalent of the sex scene. There mightn't be the sex scene, but there's the equivalent of the sex scene. Do you want me
to
give you one?
Explain it to me. Yeah.
Do you want me to give
me.
You one, right? There's the moment where, let's say traditionally,
is this
buddy
from The
comedy.
Odd Couple, though, the Walter Matthau one?
I was going to start off with the Odd Couple, but I'm not. I'm veering a little bit left because this just triggered what you've
just
triggered.
Just when you said sex scene, I just thought Walter Matthau. So, yeah.
Well, I'm definitely going to bring up The Odd Couple next. But there's a moment in these buddy comedy movies where sometimes you start off with two kind of opposite characters, two very contrasting characters who are stuck together and they have to achieve some sort of goal over the course of a narrative. And that's, let's say, 80% of them are like that. But then you have the type of buddy comedy movies where we start with friends who are already friends at the beginning. Okay, so...
let me think of ones...
I need to stop right now. Just don't you think about it. I want to bomb the place. Like, I want to rip it in, you asshole.
I can't think. Go on.
Wayne's World.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne's World, buddy time, excellent.
So in Wayne's World, you start off with Wayne and Garth, and they're buddies to begin with. And as the story unfolds and as the relationship develops, we see how that relationship kind of comes under pressure and whatnot. But there's a sex scene in that between Wayne and Garth. And my sex scene in Wayne's World is the scene where they're sitting on the bonnet of the car, looking up at the night sky.
She's a babe.
She's a robo-babe. In Latin, she would be called Babia Majora.
If she were a president, she'd be Abraham Lincoln.
And they're just having chats, Wayne is talking about how Cassandra, the girl he's met, oh, she's really amazing. And Gareth is just
Tia Carrera.
Gareth is daydreaming about how he used to find Bugs Bunny in a dress kind of sexy.
Did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when he'd put on a dress and play a girl bunny?
There's an intimacy, and it actually climaxes because a plane flies overhead and they go, whoa, together. And there's, in a romantic movie, might be a kissy, cuddly, snuggly moment.
Okay, okay, keep looking up.
Okay.
I can't think of another one in a film like that.
Deadpool and Wolverine, the scene in the minivan.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally the sex scene.
These films, they've got synonyms that are often used for them. And one of them is a bromance.
Yeah, even though it doesn't have to be males.
Yeah, I know that. But it's like the two-handers or a bromance. Well, there aren't that many female buddy comedy movies.
There are a few, but not enough.
There aren't that many.
I would bring up The Heat. The Sandra Bullock, Melissa McCarthy film?
Yeah, I mean, there are
a few, yeah.
There's Booksmart, there's Romy and Michelle, there's Barb and Star.
Barb and Star, oh my God, that brings me back to COVID times.
I'm Star, short for Starbra.
Assume yours is Barbara.
Nope, just Barb. Plain old Barb. I'm Barb, and this is Star.
Wrong number again, please, sir.
6'11".
6'11"? Oh, my... Barb. Oh, my gosh, he's 6'11". 6'11"? We're in 124.
Jesus, that film was good fun. I remember it was deep, deep COVID. Nothing new was coming out. And all of a sudden, Barb and Star was released on streaming. And we set up our big screen projector.
I went to the cinema to see it.
Did you?
Yeah, just to...
just you. You broke in.
No mask.
Started a projector.
That's very funny.
Up your laptop.
Go ahead, Barb. Yeah.
Sat on some stranger's lap.
Social distancing me fucking arse.
Give me some of that popcorn. I want to drink.
Yeah, but look, that's a typical example of two friends. The conflict with them is so subtle. It comes down to them both falling for Jamie Dornan. And the tension is their friendship is going to suffer because they're going to let a guy in between what they've got. Because they're so simpatico, they're so sort of like the same person.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. But yeah, I just made a note of that where it was like, aside from Bette Midler, who was quite antagonistic in like the 80s, buddy comedies, they usually aren't guys butting heads as much.
And that's another example of that type of film where we start off with where the buddies are buddies to begin with.
I would class a buddy comedy as being two separate stars coming together. It's a two-hander and they both have equal billing. It's not like a sidekick to a bigger star. It's like twins. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, two people who can head up their own movies and they're movie stars in their own right. And they come together to do a buddy comedy.
On the poster, it's two faces on the poster. That's it. You know, it's not like a cast of characters. It's not a group of buddies. This is a two-hander. It's very much all centered on them. The world isn't, you know, under threat, or it possibly could be. But it's just really about the whole focus of the drama is on them, the relationship, and how they get through whatever thing they have to get through, whether it be a road movie or whether it be a mission or whether it be some sort of
super
relationship
villain plot,
challenges.
Like with Zoolander.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm Vincent's brother.
We're twins.
That's right.
You tell your brother he messes with me, he messes with my whole family.
Although... Uh-huh. There are some buddy comedies where there are more than two. Can you think of any?
Where there are more than two buddies?
Yeah.
Oh, lordy. Because I was limiting myself to just the two, but please, please tell me.
Well, The Hangover.
It says here we should work in teams. Who wants to be my spotter?
I don't think you should be doing too much gambling tonight, Alan.
Gambling? Who said anything about gambling? It's not gambling when you know you're going to win. Counting cards is a foolproof system.
It's also illegal.
It's not illegal. It's frowned upon, like masturbating on an airplane.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah.
And 9 to 5.
Dorley, what are you two doing here?
Dorley, something terrible has happened.
What?
Violet put rat poison in Hart's coffee.
I didn't do it on purpose. It was an accident.
You mean that's why?
He looks just like Skinny and Sweet.
Good grief.
Okay, of course, yeah.
First Wives Club.
Who's your friend? Me or Brenda?
What?
Yeah, for once in your life, make a decision. Who's your buddy? Some Beverly Hills science project?
Or a woman with her own aisle at the supermarket?
Oh, you know what? I've never seen The First Wives Club.
Yeah, it's all right. It's good. It's, but you know what I mean? It's movie star.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And they've got equal billing and it's about their dynamic. Their goal is entwined, whatever they're...
Yeah.
So the three of them are like one character, but with separate strands of personality traits and whatever. Same thing with like a buddy comedy. Both of them have to achieve the same thing.
Yeah. You know the way I there was one film, you know the way you always say, show your homework? And I was just doing my research and randomly trying to
find
films.
That's just because I don't trust that you've ever done any.
No, I randomly try and find films that I haven't seen before and should have watched. And when I was researching, one film came up a couple of times, which I'd never seen. And I said, okay, I got to give this a go. But after I watched it, it kind of fell into that category of, oh, there's multiple stars here, multiple leads, and I don't think it's the pair. And it's a film from the 1970s called Coolie High.
It was the best of times. They were the best of friends. They made the best of memories.
Why don't you go somewhere?
Your place or mine?
Coolie High.
Coolie High. It's the name of a school. It's more of a coming of age kind of high school movie.
Those cool, cool days. Coolie High.
But we have a cast of characters who are, yeah, they're just four of them, essentially four buddies. And it's about them going through this particular period at their last year of high school. It's set in Chicago around 1963. It came out in 1975. I was glad I watched it because it was a bit of black cinema that I'd never seen before, but it was more of a high school movie, coming of age movie. And I kind of parked it. But it, yeah,
so you're showing me your history homework for the maths test.
I'm showing you, I've said I watched this film that I kind of parked, but I parked it because there was multiple buddies and I went, oh, it's more for a high school movie. I would bring it up if I was talking about high school movies. But in that instance, there's four kind of main lead characters. And it's quite good. All I'm saying is it's quite good. If you haven't seen Coolie High, you can find it. I think it's on Tubi TV, as a matter of fact. So get your VPN out and you can watch it there for free.
Yeah, so just to play along, I watched something for this episode.
And what did you watch?
It's a show called Coronation Street.
And fuck you. Fuck you.
It's not really what I would class as like a buddy comedy, but there are characters in it who are buddies. And so I thought
My point being, why those lists had that film in buddy comedy, I don't understand. Because it popped up on several lists, this film called Coolie High. And when I watched it, I went, why?
That's
are
because they're all written by AI. These are all fucking AI slop lists.
I felt it wasn't AI. I felt it was a real list. But anyway, I ended up on a list. And now I'm saying I wasted 2 hours watching that film, and now I'm wasting your time listening to this. Hey, you
so hang on.
I
want to give you some history here.
That's where I wanted to go as well. Yeah, tell us some history.
The first buddy comedy is often considered to be Laurel and Hardy films from the late 20s and 1930s. The iconic comedy duo of Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy starred in numerous films that centered on their bumbling, lovable friendship. Their blend of slapstick humor and witty banter laid the foundation for the buddy comedy genre. One of their earliest feature films, The Battle of the Century from 1927, showcases their classic dynamic of the goofy, well-meaning Laurel and the more serious, often frustrated Hardy. That's just off the top of my head.
It's all in the delivery. It's all in the delivery there, Kevin. It felt so impassioned. It felt so human. It felt like it came from the heart, you know? You bring up Laurel and Hardy. And I remember when I was young, one particular Christmas
We're going way back.
On the channels, what I'm talking about is RTE1 and RTE2.
That's all you had back then.
That's what we had. They showed a Laurel and Hardy movie every morning around on the lead up to Christmas. And because there was nothing else on and because you're just sitting there just with no video.
It was either that or go to mass.
It was either that, go to mass, or go out and
have a fight.
Go out and cut the grass around Christmas, around December. The only one cutting the grass in December.
Just to annoy the neighbours.
Just to annoy the neighbours. Says you can't be cutting
the
grass
stop
already.
Stop cutting the fucking grass. Fuck off.
But I fucking fell in love with Laurel and Hardy because they would be on and I would watch them.
I used to watch them with my granddad. They were one of the only films that he would cackle at.
Oh, they were so fucking funny. They were so funny. By chance, did you ever watch the Steve Coogan, John C. Reilly movie about them? I think it's called Stan and Ollie.
I did not, no.
It's well worth a watch. It's well worth a watch. It's them.
It's a British film, isn't it?
Yeah, it's them.
I don't watch foreign films.
It's them at the end of their career. And it is a buddy comedy. Again, it is a buddy comedy. It's at the end of their career and it's them kind of their
career. I would have thought that was a biopic. Waning.
It's a biopic, but it's the two of them. It's two lead characters and they're comedians, so there is elements of comedy and whatnot. So I'm saying it's a fucking buddy comedy. I'm being very vague. We brought up Carnation Street. I'm bringing up Stan and Ollie.
I also want to bring up another buddy comedy. It's called Friends.
Fuck you. My point being, I'm going back to it. I loved Laurel and Hardy. I loved them because one was round and frustrated and then you had the other guy. I don't know which is which, actually.
Stan is the dad of Clint Eastwood, allegedly.
What?
Stan Laurel, yeah. If you look at Stan Laurel and you look at Clint Eastwood when he was young, they're the spitting image of each other.
Okay,
but I think that's just like an old rumor, you know, like O.J. Simpson killed his wife or, you know, those things that are just
people
urban
are eating,
legends.
Like migrants are eating cats and dogs in Springfield. Is that a sort of thing? It's a sort of stuff.
This town is a part of us all.
This is the first time I ever heard that particular conspiracy theory. Or
do you
whatever,
believe me?
Urban legend. No, I don't believe you.
Do you think I just made it up for the podcast?
I'm assuming yes, that you did.
You don't trust me at all.
Talking to you, you stupid cunt.
I have a whole list of films here. And because you love your animated films, I made a list of some great buddy comedies.
Okay. Throw them at me.
Toy Story.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, of course. They hate each other. There's jealousy and whatnot. And yeah, but eventually they go through the journey. It's all about their...
Toy Story 2.
Wait, hang on a second.
Toy Story 3.
Oh, wasn't expecting that. Right, okay. Mm-hmm. Next one.
Finding Dory.
Okay.
And then this one called Finding Nemo. And Up. Yeah.
Very good.
You actually think you're the Buzz Lightyear?
Oh, all this time I thought it was an act. Hey, guys, look! It's the real Buzz Lightyear!
You're mocking me, aren't you?
Oh, no, 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 no. Buzz, look, an alien!
Where? Ah!
You brought up a film that I rewatched for this, and I loved it when I originally watched it back in the day. And I rewatched it now, and I still love it. And it is The Odd Couple, the Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon film.
What's wrong, Oscar?
Something wrong with this system. That's what's wrong. I don't think that two single men living alone in a big 8-room apartment should have a cleaner house than my mother.
It was originally a stage play, and you can totally see the film is still very much the stage play, you know, with a little bit of, like, you know, outdoor locations here and there. Bit of trivia for you. In the stage play, Walter Matthau plays the uptight Felix Unger character. And for the feature film, he ends up playing the slob.
Oh, I kind of remember that.
Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They switched for the movies.
They switched for the movies. Well, Jack Lemmon wasn't. It was Art Carney who originally played the Oscar character. That's what you said. And it was one of those films that I had taped off TV when I was in my teens. And I found myself watching it over and over again. I just found it so pleasurable. It is so funny. The dialogue is just piercing and, you know, really, really just hilarious. The characters are so well drawn. Like, Walter Matthau is this total slob, absolute horrible slob. He's got, you know, sweat stains and he's got fucking food just lying all over the place, literally everywhere. And then Felix is a newly divorced, well, the matter was divorced, and Felix, played by Jack Lemmon, is newly divorced the night that the story begins, where all the buddies are gathered for their Friday night poker game. And they're all afraid that he's going to commit suicide. So Walter Matthau takes him into his apartment and says, right, you're going to stay here. You're going to stay with me. Very, very quickly, Felix starts to drive Oscar mad. And Oscar starts to drive Felix mad. And it is totally a relationship. They end up being husband and wife. And they're bickering. And the
it's very sweet as well, though. It has this like lovely subtext that's quite sweet.
Yeah. And we're talking about sex scenes, right? There's a scene in it, there's a really hilarious scene where Walter is like mad to, he's got an eye for the
ride.
Yeah. And he ends up picking up two English birds, these pigeon twins, in the lift, and he brings them back to, he says, he arranges a date with them, and he says, right, Felix, you and I, we've got a date Friday night, we're going to a Chinese restaurant. And Felix is just like, no, we'll have it here, I'm going to make meatloaf and all this sort of stuff. And they're supposed to show up at, like, Walter's supposed to show up at 7 o'clock, the girl's supposed to show at 7:30, and Walter, of course, shows up at 8 o'clock, and Felix has got the frilly apron on and the soup ladle and whatnot. And when Walter shows up, it's totally the husband and wife. They're having great bickering conversation, even to the point where the doorbell rings. He is saying, well, it's such a couple argument, and there's another couple coming over. It's so funny. And the thing about it is where I was talking about sex scenes, right? That scene should be the sex scene of the movie, where Walter's finally going to copulate or, you know, relieve his loins or whatever. And Felix fucks it all up. So Walter's frustrated. He's literally sexually frustrated because Jack Lemmon's character is so uptight and so, you know, caught up in his own fucking head that it doesn't work out. But ultimately, like all good buddy comedies, they kind of have to realize that the other person is filling some missing part to them or helping them kind of resolve some kind of internal deficiency. Oscar the slob gets a little bit cleaner and more straightened up, and Felix kind of gets over the loss of his wife.
Oscar, you're asking to hear something I don't want to say. But if I do say it, I think you ought to hear it.
You got anything on your chest besides your chin, you better get it off.
All right, then you asked for it. You're a wonderful guy, Oscar. You've done everything for me. If it weren't for you, I don't know what would have happened to me. You took me in here, you gave me a place to live, you gave me something to live for. I'm never going to forget you for that, Oscar. You're tops with me.
If I've just been told off, I think I may have missed it.
It's coming.
They learn from each other. That's like the classic thing of a buddy comedy is they rub off on each other and they're both improved by the relationship. The typical thing is one needs to loosen up and the other one needs to straighten up.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It is. But also, you know, you've got the hero's journey where the character goes out into the world and they change the world.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to comedies, the hero's journey is more internal. It's about them changing something within themselves that's broken. So they heal themselves.
So, right, yeah.
And with a buddy comedy, with some buddy comedies, we haven't gotten into buddy cop movies, but with some buddy comedies, it is about figuring out what that missing piece is about themselves and fixing that. So the character arc, the journey that they go on is internal, it's not external. Buddy cop movies, they might have some big case they've got to solve or whatever, or some bad guy they've got to take down. But it does come back to there is a missing piece that both of them help the other identify and fix.
Another film that I watched, which I'd never heard of before I started doing my little bit of a research, The In-Laws.
He's a dentist from New Jersey.
Make a house call?
Yes, one of those emergencies.
He travels a lot on business.
I work for the CIA.
Starring Alan Arkin and Peter Falk. It came out in 1979. It is,
I don't know,
really, really entertaining. Really entertaining. Peter Falk plays a criminal. And when the story opens, he's pulled off a big bank heist for printing plates for counterfeit money. Alan Arkin is a straight up dentist, but both of their kids are going to get married. So the wedding is happening like the following week and the in-laws have never met. So this is the first time they are going to encounter each other. Peter Falk has pulled off this huge bank heist. What's gas about it is he is as cool as a breeze. Meanwhile, Alan Arkin is, like, as we've kind of been describing already, is really uptight and anxious, but he has a very, very funny, dry wit comedy delivery, Alan Arkin. It works so well. Ultimately, basically, the dentist gets pulled into the fucking shenanigans, Peter Falk's shenanigans with these plates and whatnot, and puts him in mortal danger and ends up dragging him down to South America, where they get involved with a Banana Republic dictator. And all that stuff is actually really fucking funny. It's so funny the whole way. But the best scenes are when the two of them are together. It's a great little movie. I highly recommend it. I had never heard of it before. Glad I found it. I recommend you watch it, Kevin.
You gotta watch this. Do you know what the most successful buddy comedy is of all time? It's Rush Hour.
No way.
I'm not responsible for your assumption.
Yeah, Rush Hour. Some real notorious flops, Ishtar. It's fine.
Which
it's fine.
I'm a fan of.
I know how bad you feel, but there's people in this world worse off than you.
People who haven't got anybody to go out on a ledge for them. Come on, give me your hand.
Buddy comedies are sort of built on the basis of two stars coming together, and we don't really have movie stars anymore. So the last big buddy comedy that I can think of, because they started to peter around the 2010s with like Superbad and Knocked Up and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's The Nice Guys. And The Nice Guys obviously flopped. But that's a very funny film.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe that's kind of one of the last big ones.
21 Jump Street. They don't really make them anymore.
Oh, wow. And watching these films and doing research, I kind of realized that buddy comedy films are maybe my favorite subgenre of film. They're
really?
Like kind of, yeah, I think they're like comfort food for me. I like that. I like just kind of like grooving along with these characters that I enjoy being in their company.
Because you don't get stressed out. There's no sex scenes.
Yeah, well, maybe that's it. Or maybe I'm just imagining the sex scenes that could happen between them. I don't know.
There was an awful lot of them in the 80s. That was sort of like their heyday.
Oh, yeah. It was a
heyday. They were throwing everybody together.
You know, you can go back through history and see the two stars together are always a hit. Like, you know, you had Laurel and Hardy, you had Bing Crosby and Bob
Butch
Hope.
Cassidy and Sundance.
Butch Cassidy and Sundance, yeah. So it was a big thing. But you're right. It's very movie star driven, like this guy and that guy together, you know, let's see what happens.
Then you've got the ones that are sort of like they blend genres, like Men in Black, because it's such a it's such a facile concept that you can plug it in anything, really. I did it in,
yeah,
I've mentioned this before, and I'm only just going to briefly bring it up. That was my intention with Grabbers. Grabbers was a buddy comedy.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've never seen a guy and a girl in a buddy comedy where it's not about them hooking up. It's about an odd couple relationship and whether they can get over their differences and become a really strong partnership. And I remember being told that the financiers wanted them to kiss at the end, and I was like, but I didn't write a rom-com, I've written a buddy comedy. And they're like, yeah, no, they've got such great chemistry, they need to kiss at the end. And I was like, at that stage, just trying to pick my battles and trying to ring fence certain things, where I was like, you don't cut this, you've got to keep this, cut that, don't cut this. And so I said, fine, they can kiss at the end. But I never wrote it as a rom-com. It was written as a buddy comedy. The thing is, the beats are kind of the same, no matter what you do, but it's there are certain key scenes that you need in a rom-com that I didn't put in there that I think would have made that a smoother transition to the end. But yeah, I thought that was interesting, and it's my own unique perspective on it. But I do love buddy comedy, so I wrote one.
Yeah, and as we've kind of already discussed, the buddy comedy and the rom-com are actually so close. You know, it is, you know, they're not too dissimilar, really, essentially, as film types. You brought one, you were talking about the 80s earlier on, and one of my favorite ones to watch I watch it nearly every year, is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
During holiday travel, some people get delirious. Some get delayed. and some get Del Griffin.
American lighting fixture, director of sales, shower curtain ring division.
I knew you were going to say it because I was going to bring it up because of the sex scenes, because that's got a very obvious one.
Yeah.
Where they're spooning.
Yeah.
And he's got his hand between his pillows.
That scene.
And I was always confused as a kid watching that because I was thinking, how's he getting his hand down that low? Like, to put it in between his butt cheeks as a pillow. That just feels like such an awkward way to be stretching your hand.
It's just, listen, we got to try it sometime.
Fuck off.
We'll test it out. That scene is, that whole motel room sequence, for me, it's the kind of catharsis of that film, which I adore. Two brilliant comedians, Steve Martin playing totally the straight guy,
and
John
Short.
Candy. And John Candy just being this annoying hanger-on who's always there. It's a brilliant scene, but I love that frustration.
The only thing about that film that I hate it. And I love everything about it, but I have to skip when that scene comes on. And it's the I like me scene. I like me. I just find that so nauseating, so like cloying.
You want to hurt me? Go right ahead if it makes you feel any better. I'm an easy target. Yeah, you're right. I talk too much. I also listen too much. I could be a cold-hearted cynic like you. But I don't like to hurt people's feelings. Well, you think what you want about me. I'm not changing. I like me. My wife likes me. My customers like me. Because I'm the real article. What you see is what you get.
I like that scene.
I don't like... I know you
would. I like that scene. I like that scene. Kevin, I like me and I like it.
I like me.
I like
that fuck scene. Off, John.
That scene, do you know when he's in the bathroom and he goes to the bathroom first, like, you know, to
he's
shower.
He's washing his underpants.
Who Steve does Martin that? Goes in there. Steve Martin goes in after him, and the floor is just drenched. It's the verisimilitude of that scene alone made me feel Steve Martin's frustration because everything is fucking sopping. He's got every towel has been used. He has to wash himself. He has to dry himself off with a face
for flannel.
Ultimately, yes, it's awful, and you totally feel it's when you get when you're intruded upon in that intimate going to sleep moment. I think that's true breaking point for anyone, and that's what happens, and we have our intimate sex scene between the two characters, you know, that intimate moment between
what
them.
Is your breaking point?
I can't finish the sentence.
Trying to fall off to sleep and just being kept awake.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely if I'm tired, I'm not hangry. I don't get hangry, but I definitely get sleep
you don't?
Angry.
I get very hangry.
Oh, most people do get really hangry. I can kind of hold it off.
Isn't that a survival thing though? It's like you get your blood up because it's like I need to kill something.
Give me that fucking food.
I am the opposite. I'm not a morning person. So if I haven't woken up and you start talking to me and you're rabbiting on, I'm like, just fucking die, please. Die.
Oh really? I'm usually a morning person. I'm fine. I'm that chirpy. Hey there, come on.
That's why we're recording this at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Explains why you can't be good cop at this hour of the morning. But Planes, Trains is on my list as a brilliant buddy comedy. I adore it. I love that film. It can be a little bit maudlin, a little bit, but I totally forgive it.
What you see is what you get.
I forgive it because the film puts Steve Martin through so much shit. I really feel bad for him, you know, so many times. I think it really puts him through the ringer.
Do you know, when this topic came up, the first thing I thought about was a pairing that did more than one film together, that they were so good in the first film that they came back twice more.
Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor?
No, it was Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
Oh, okay. Right.
Depending on when the film came out, I noticed that actually, that in the first film, it's Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor, and in the second film, it's Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder.
I'm trying to figure out what... So are you mentioning one of these films?
Well, yeah. I mean, okay. I was doing my homework for this topic and I thought I'd watch some buddy comedies.
Right.
Buddy comedy episode.
Right.
And Stir Crazy is a buddy comedy.
We're in prison.
Oh, God damn, man. Welcome to the real world. Not a minute too soon, I might add. Now brace up. Be strong.
I don't think I'm going to make it.
Oh, did we not discuss this? Did we not review this or something like that? Did this not come up somewhere?
No, we did the other one. We did on FlixWatcher. I brought up Hear No Evil, See No Evil.
Ah, yeah, okay, okay.
See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Is it the other way
See
around?
See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Right.
It's one of my favorite films, that one. Speak No Evil, Say No Evil.
I haven't seen Stir Crazy since, you know, the 80s. So tell me about Stir Crazy.
Right, we're talking about great scenes. This is one of my... There are certain scenes in movies that I know, no matter how many times I see them, they're going to make me laugh. There's one in Bowfinger when Eddie Murphy is walking through the parking garage and the dog is wearing the high heels and they're trying to film him and he's like going, ha-ha, ha-ha. And the complimentary scene to that is when the two guys are sent to prison and they're walking in to the prison. And you know, it's the typical thing of all that the inmates are given, they're heckling them and whatever. And Richard Pryor says to Gene Wilder, you got to act tough, man. You got to act tough. They're going to eat us for breakfast unless we act tough. And so he's all like, he's trying to pass off the fact that he can kick everybody's ass. And Richard Pryor is so skinny and so feeble looking. And they're both pretending to be able to do karate. And it's hilarious.
What are you doing?
I'm getting bad. Better get bad, Jack, because you ain't bad. You're going to get fucked. You're bad. They don't mess with you.
But it's their chemistry. You know the way they say with certain rom-coms, actors have chemistry, they don't have chemistry.
Absolutely.
Kill a film.
It's just essential. Yeah, it's absolutely essential.
It's the same for a buddy comedy.
Like, yeah.
They've got to have chemistry. They've got to, there's got to be a sense, a glint in their eyes that they're really enjoying each other.
Yeah.
That it's not irritating. It's not genuinely irritating one another, but they're playing it up. And that's the Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor partnership definitely has that, where they're like us. They feel like they can finish each other's...
What? But you know what I find interesting?
Sandwiches.
You're bringing up... What's that from? That's from Finish Each Other's Sandwiches. That's from a musical, isn't it?
It probably is. Others,
sandwiches. It's in something. Is it from Frozen? It might have been from Frozen.
That's correct.
Oh yes! Oh my god!
Thanks, Podbot.
Absolutely.
Oh my god! I got it. Oh yes. Oh yes.
A bit more like me. It's like we finish each other's
sandwiches.
Arrested Development did it first.
But you're bringing up the chemistry. I find it fascinating.
Do that again. I got it.
Oh, well, yes. I got it. All right, you can't use that. Okay, that was a crazy person and you cannot use it.
Well, listen, I've already humiliated myself enough by doing the introduction as if I was on the toilet. So come here, I can't go any lower.
That's
so no matter
right.
what you do,
I'll
no matter what
those,
you do
those
to
will
me,
be the new stems that I'll use for the intros.
No matter what you do to me now, I can't get any lower. I always find it fascinating.
How low can you go?
When you see these two great actors on screen having great chemistry, but then learning that in real life, they did not get on at all. And that was the case with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor.
No, it wasn't. They did get on.
I heard they did not share any, you know, kind of like personal...
No, they did.
I remember hearing that they... seeing Gene Wilder in an interview saying, yeah, we don't kind of see each other, you know, we never...
No, they wouldn't hang out with each other, but when they work together, they've got great chemistry.
Okay. I thought they...
It's like us. We don't hang out off mic.
Because we're on mic the entire time. Prick
you. Don't you have friendships like that, though, where you see someone you haven't seen for years and you just pick up right where you left off?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like arguing.
Those aren't friendships, Kevin. They're called mortal enemies. You're getting things mixed up again. But Dana Carvey and Mike Myers in Wayne's World, they didn't get along.
Did they not?
No, they did not get on.
there's something right. One of the great selling points of Friends, the TV show, is that you can tell that the six of them cared about each other and there was a genuine friendship there off camera as well as being on camera. And I think what helped to solidify that was that David Schwimmer was the first of the group to break out and become like almost the star of the show. And when they were negotiating pay for the following seasons, whatever it was, season two or three or whatever, he said, yeah, look, guys, let's band together and let's all get equal pay, equal billing, equal pay, and we'll put ourselves in for awards contention, the same categories and whatever. And I feel like that definitely helps where there's mutual respect there. And it's like, I'm not better than you. This is a partnership. We go 50-50 on everything, or in that case, 18% or whatever. And I feel like with Wayne's World that Mike Myers pulled away and was like, look, I'm the bigger star here, so I'll probably take the guts of the pay. I'll get like 1.5 million and you get 300,000.
Yeah.
And that's where resentment can sort of breathe.
Yeah. And like, when it's a kind of shared characters that they had created in Saturday Night Live together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where. And he apparently, Mike Myers, is very controlling. Like, I think he had an awful lot of control on the set.
Well, he's a serial killer. Production.
He's a serial killer.
Yeah. He's been stalking Jamie Lee Curtis since 1978.
For fuck's sakes.
I like me. My customers like me.
Do you know what's funny? I've got some trivia for you. Dana Carvey cameos in Halloween 2.
Oh, really?
Well, he doesn't cameo. He was just an extra. But he's like, he's in the opening scene. The reporter that's covering the news, she tells him to go do something. And it's like, holy shit, that's Dana Carvey. Isn't that funny? Ah, okay. That's why people listen to the best bits.
I would love it if at the end of Halloween Ends that they took off Michael Myers' mask and it was Michael Myers from Wayne's World.
I think there was a joke that planned like that in one of the Edgar Wright films, the car one he did. What was that? Go Faster or something, or Zip
Boom Bum Baby. Baby Driver.
Baby Driver, that's it. Thanks, Podbot.
What?
Fuck you.
Do you know what's a really good one, actually? Hot Fuzz. That's my favorite of the Edgar Wright films.
Same, yeah. It is great. What does he say? What's the one he goes, Bad Boys 2, Point Break or Bad Boys 2? And he says, you mean which one do you want to watch? No, which one do you want to watch first? Isn't that the funny line, the funny thing he does on that? It is good. And they've got great chemistry. Nick Frost and Simon Pegg have incredible chemistry on screen.
You ain't seen Bad Boys 2?
Do you know they've never actually met each other?
Oh, right. I didn't know. That's interesting. That's interesting trivia. That's good. That's why people come to the best bits to get
thanks, Podbot.
You bastard.
Such well-researched and backed up by multiple sources types of trivia. So, well done.
Okay, so look, what have we learned? We've learned that women don't make good buddy comedies.
Incorrect.
No, look, I'll reiterate what my notes were. I was like, okay, so buddy comedy is the same as rom-coms, except there's no sex. It's the same thing. You've got two characters that complement each other and they antagonize one another. They've both got shared goals, so it's whatever they need to achieve to arc as a character. It's something that they both have to do together. They've been predominantly made in the 80s, and I think that goes hand in hand with movie stars in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Movie stars were like the big box office draw. Mm-hmm. We've always had movie stars. We don't have many more, but we...
Movie stars would open a movie. You could rely on movie stars alone, their name on the poster, to open a movie.
You'd buy a ticket to go along to see the latest Shelley Long film.
Absolutely. I still would.
Outrageous fortune. I just have that down there, the Bette Midler Shelley Long film.
There was a whole series of Shelley Long, Bette Midler like movies. It was outrageous for Big Business. There was another one, Big Business.
No, that's not her. That's Lily Tomlin.
Then there was the one where there were twins. Remember there was one where there was two sets?
That was Arnold Schwarzenegger and...
No. No.
Big Business is the one. Shelley Long and Arnold Schwarzenegger twins.
No, there was two. Was it Lily Tomlin?
Big Business is the one with her twins. They recreate that scene.
I don't believe them being twins. I don't believe Shelley Long. I bet it's as ridiculous as Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. I know that there were two sets of twins. That's what it was. Two
no,
sets
they were
of twins
actors. They were pretending to be twins.
Yeah, but now we're talking complete shit. Stay on target.
Stay on target.
Isn't it funny that there have been no movie star twins?
What about The Social Network?
He's gone completely. What was his name again? I can't even remember it.
He's cancelled, McCancelled. That's who he is. I can't remember his name either. He's cancelled.
Oh, you had Tia and Tamori from Sister Sister.
Oh, yeah. That's a good podbot.
What?
Have there been any movie star twins?
No.
Linda Hamilton's a twin. They used her twin in T2.
Oh, but movie star twins.
Linda Hamilton was a movie star, Will. Why do you hate Linda Hamilton? What's she done to you? I remember on the commentary, was it Terminator 2? You said, I just don't like her. I just don't think she's very good. Oh. And I said, well, that's not fair. You said, I don't give a fuck. I just don't like her.
I can't believe that.
There has been a set of twins.
She's a has-been.
are a powerhouse. Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
You had those two ginger cunts from Gremlins 2 and Terminator 2.
And Terminator 2, yeah, that's it.
The guy who was the bad guy in that last Bond film, Rami Malek, he's a twin.
Stop, really?
He is. They don't look very much alike, though.
Oh, the guys from Harry Potter.
Dan Radcliffe and Hermione.
No, James, the guys who played Fred and George Weasley in the Harry Potter films, they're twins.
But the characters we said are twins. Movie stars.
I know, but there aren't. There really haven't been. The top of the list are Mary-Kate and Ashley. Those are the ones that are at the top of the list.
Have there been any buddy comedies with two people who were playing the same part? Has Eddie Murphy done that?
Say it again. Two people playing the same part.
Sorry, let me say that again. Have there been any buddy comedies with two people who were playing the same part? One person playing twins in a buddy comedy. Like Eddie Murphy against Eddie Murphy. In Bowfinger, I suppose, he played twins. He was Kit and he was Jif.
I'm thinking of Jean-Claude Van Damme, but it wasn't a comedy. But if you look at it from a certain perspective,
I laughed.
Yeah, was that Double Dragon or something it was called?
Double Team?
Double Team, Double Something? Double Punch?
Double Impact.
Hey.
My favourite episodes of the podcast are when we just give up and just start talking shit.
I have a couple more to go. I have a couple I want to bring up. I did.
So do I. And these, my final two, I was jockeying between picking one or the other.
I wonder, are we going to end up with the same number one? I do wonder. I'm bringing up one because you're talking about salary disparity. And it was one of my favorite buddy comedies from the 90s. And at the time, I think I watched it many, many times.
Salary disparity. Just
my big salary disparity. Big salary disparity.
Tango and Cash.
No. It's Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, yeah.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Guys!
Skis, huh?
That's right.
They're yours?
Uh-huh.
Both of them?
Yeah.
Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels got paid a fortune.
Jeff Daniels got paid a fortune in peanuts. In peanuts. That's what he got paid.
They didn't want him in that film, though, did they?
No. They basically scheduled to have all of his scenes shot first, or the first week was him all alone.
So they could replace him if he was not working.
Yeah, and the dailies were being sent back to the studio. And to be fair to Jim Carrey, I think Jim Carrey was batting for him the whole time. Jim Carrey was originally, I think, he was originally scheduled to get like 700,000 for the film, and he ended up getting 7 million because his salary
was that because
went
of Ace Ventura and The Mask had come out?
The Mask, yeah, all came out the same year. He was a huge hit. The budget of the film was 17 million, so he took not half, but close to 50% of the budget. And Jeff Daniels, I don't know what Jeff Daniels was paid.
Jeff Daniels was reportedly paid $50,000.
But you know what, though?
What?
When those actors get cast in those huge hits like that, they make a fortune in residuals.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and
it's worth it for the indignity of like being there and, you know, you're playing second banana to the biggest movie star going at the moment. Just think, the film's going to be a huge hit and you're going to make all this money on DVDs and Blu-rays, and it's going to open you up to so many other films where you can
Jeff Daniels wasn't considered a comedic actor up to that point. And that's why the studio were very, very unsure of him. And as a result of the success and as a result of his fucking brilliant performance, all of a sudden, his opportunities as an actor just expanded, you know, exponentially because of the range he was performing. Behind the scenes trivia, Harry is called Harry because he's named after one of the Farrelly's childhood buddies.
John.
Who inspired him. John, yeah. I love it. I still laugh at that film. I think that film is utterly fucking hilarious. The scene I love...
Because it's the thing that we talked about before. Naivety and innocence, stupid humor is the funniest humor for me. It gets me right down in my plums. I just laugh.
Down in your plums. And this film goes stupid, and then it's stupid to the stupid. Do you know what I mean? But it knowingly is stupid. It's quite self-aware of itself and how stupid it is. I love, there's a scene in there where they're lost out in the plains in the Midwest, like in Oklahoma. And they've driven the car and the car runs out of petrol. It's the dog, the shag wagon or whatever it is. And Jim Carrey has driven them a sixth of the way in the wrong direction. And Harry loses it with Jim Carrey. Absolutely loses it. And you're feeling this is the end of their relationship. And Harry goes into a field and he sits in the field. And it's a brilliant shot of him from behind and just his butt crack. His butt crack is on the dirt. And Harry just says, I give up. I'm walking home. And he's walking down the road. And about a few minutes later, coming behind him, bzzz, and light pulls up in this tiny, tiny fucking little scooter. And he's like, guess what I've done? I gave away the car and I got this baby. And it's a moment where you think Harry's going to go, gonna you go, fucking idiot.
Yeah, and it's the opposite.
It's just, you genius. You go and do something as fucking brilliant as this.
You know, Lloyd, just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself.
Don't want to go to Aspen?
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's go, buddy.
For me, that is why the film fucking works, is because it focuses in on their relationship of how one is more stupid. One is dumber than the other. And dumber and dumber. It's fucking hilarious the whole way through. And it's all hinged on them and their chemistry and their characters and how they complement each other.
Yeah.
I fucking love it. And it doesn't get old for me. It just does not get old for me. So I had to bring that one up. I love it. I think it's great.
So will I tell you what my runner-up pick is?
Okay, and then I'll give you my runner-up pick.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds like a deal.
Okay.
So my top four on Letterboxd, I've got Jaws, I've got Superman, I've got Halloween. I've talked about those three an awful lot. The fourth one is my favorite comfort movie. I'll watch it whenever I'm down. I have it on my phone. I've got it on my iPad. I've got it on Apple
Toilet
TV.
Paper.
I do. I adore this film, and I saw it way later than all the rest. I didn't see this film until I was in college, and it's become my favorite Robert De Niro film.
That's gonna be my pick.
I thought it might
be your pick. Let's talk about it. Come on, this is my pick. But and then I'll reverse it and I'll make the other one I'll do my best. Let's talk about it. Midnight Run. It's my pick. I love it.
I love it more. I love it way more than you.
I have it as my pick. You have it as runner up. I have it as my pick. So I love it more than you. Go on.
Because I've talked about Midnight Run somewhere else on the podcast. I've talked about it. I don't know where. I think I mentioned the ending. The ending always makes me cry. It is so heartfelt and sincere and beautiful. But it's two movie stars, Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. They come together. He's a bounty hunter and the other guy is a fugitive.
I love to travel by train.
Oh, yeah? What do you think this is, a class trip?
A tough ex-cop.
Are you always this angry?
A sensitive criminal.
Oh, no, come on, come on. Cigarettes are killers.
Because I gotta bring it back myself, otherwise I won't get my money.
They can't fly. They also suffer from acrophobia and claustrophobia.
I'll tell you what, if you don't cooperate, you're going to suffer from fistophobia.
They're seeing America the hard way.
Why would you eat that?
Because it tastes good.
At gunpoint.
What did you do before you did this? What did qualify you for this?
He's gaining.
No, get it. He's flying. Of course he's gaining.
Robert De Niro.
It is truly in your best interest to just relax.
I'm totally relaxed.
Charles Grodin.
$2, that's all you're going to leave?
That's 15%.
That's 13%. These people depend on tips for a living.
From the director of Beverly Hills Cop, Midnight Run.
They go on a road trip and they cross the country, and Charles Grodin has a specific knack for just winding up Robert De Niro so much.
Yeah.
But there's a sweetness that's right under the surface. And everything that we talk about with the genre, about characters complimenting each other and fixing holes within each other, they learn about each other's motives, their dreams. There's an intimacy that develops between the two of them. They even act as like therapists for one another. Like there's a beautiful scene when Robert De Niro goes to see his ex-wife and he sees his daughter that he hasn't seen for a long time. You learn all these things about him being somebody who was too moral in a corrupt police force, and it cost him his career, it cost him his marriage, it cost him the relationship with his kid. And it rides the line of being hilarious, but it doesn't compromise the sentiment that comes out of this relationship between the two of them. The ending always gets me. It always gets me. I cry every single time. But it's the scene that sort of encapsulates a buddy comedy. It's the litmus configuration.
Oh, it's so good, yeah.
When De Niro agrees to let Charles Grodin do what he does best, which is to swindle and be a con man. And so they walk into this old rundown bar in the middle of nowhere and where they've run out of money. And he swindles the guy out of the barman, out of money, by pretending to be the FBI. And they're going to carry out the litmus configuration, which is a bullshit thing he's just made up.
Yeah.
Robert De Niro has to go along with it. He has to play along. He's got to be, you know, his wingman. And they basically steal money off the bar by duping them.
Lonzo Mosley, FBI. My partner and I have been tracking a ring of counterfeiters passing phony $20 bills across the state. Have you received any $20 bills in the last couple of hours?
Yeah, sure. We get them all the time.
You get them all the time. Would you mind taking two steps backwards?
In a film that's filled with great scenes, it's a great switch of the power dynamics between the two of them, where he has to let him off the cuffs, and he's got to let him go in there and just let him run with it. And then they get the money to be able to buy the train tickets and what have you.
Can I add something to that particular scene? In that scene, or throughout the filming, Charles Grodin improvised an awful lot of his lines. And in that particular scene, the litmus configuration is completely improvised. And when you see De Niro's reaction, he does look taken aback. That was a genuine reaction. And De Niro just went with it because he knew that's the game we're playing in this. But his reaction is so sincere, it's because it's totally genuine. He was totally thrown in that particular moment. It's brilliant.
There's another lovely moment in the film where you can see that Robert De Niro breaks character when they're on the coach and he's like telling him about smoking and stuff. And he's like, I got two words for you. It's like, shut the fuck up.
Brilliant.
And Charles Grodin just keeps going, just keeps needling him, keeps like hectoring and lecturing him, and you can see Robert De Niro just can't keep it, and he's like, this guy, and he starts to laugh, and he's trying to, it's brilliant. It's the chemistry. They've got such a lovely dynamic, and I fucking love that film.
And that's one of those, another example of the studio wanted someone else instead of Charles Grodin. They wanted Robert De Niro, but they wanted, I think at one stage, Cher was originally kind of like optioned as a potential Charles Grodin character.
You are stupid.
Very different film.
Totally different film. But it was Robert De Niro again went to bat for Charles Grodin because he just knew that the chemistry between the two was, it was just popping.
He'd seen him in Beethoven. And he was like, we've got to get
him. Yeah, we got to get that dog. And if we can't get the dog, we get the dad. Right? But you brought up, I watched, funny enough, for this research, I had a nightmare every week last week where I was stuck in airports traveling for 48 hours. I had, as I was sitting for hours and hours at a time, I had my laptop with me.
Where did you go? Did you go around the world twice?
I went, essentially, it felt like I went around America twice. I had Midnight Run on my laptop and I watched it. And anytime I put the earbuds in and I locked in on the film, it gave me great peace and calm and comfort.
That's why it's, I have it as my travel film. Whenever I'm stuck at airports, when I saw you had that there, I thought, oh my God, I'm rubbing off on him because that's my airport movie. I'll just put it on my phone and just watch it. I love the music. I love the ensemble. Like everybody in that film is so good. Yaphet Kotto and Dennis Farina and Joey Pants.
Do you know what it also feels like? It feels like a buddy comedy movie that also has other buddy comedy movies happening around it. Like the Italian mobsters.
The two feel henchmen,
like their own, the two henchmen. They feel like their own buddy comedy. Joey Pants and his sidekick, they feel like a buddy comedy movie. Agent Alonso, he feels like he's in his own buddy cop movie. So it feels like it's just this rich tapestry of buddy cop
movies
happening all
around. Over there.
Do you know what the mafia guys, there's a fucking scene that I was not howling, but I was really fucking holding laughter back. When one mafia guy is talking to the Don, the boss, who's telling him, if you don't get the Duke, I will kill you. His buddy is play fighting with him, kind of like just punching him. And he's like throwing up kicks like, will you fucking stop? I've been told I'm going to be killed. I was in stitches laughing at him. It's so fucking good. The scene I'm going to pick is a scene you brought up already, and it is the final scene because it is them saying goodbye to each other at the train station. And I absolutely, like you, it kind of makes me well up. It's so beautifully...
understated.
It's totally understated, and it gets to the core of the characters. What I love about it is that through the course of this journey, you have these totally opposite individuals. Robert De Niro is stuck in the mud. He's this guy who's like, I'm going to get my fucking target to where it's
got such a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, he's really fucking just dry and hard and rough and tough. And Charles Grodin isn't necessarily a sweet, endearing character. He's just this... He's just someone who's just kind of... He's persistent. He's so dogged and persistent. But through the journey, they understand that they share a kind of a code of ethics, that they are morally standing on the same ground, even though personality-wise, they're totally different. And that at the core of them, they're both decent people. Robert De Niro, in letting him go, shows that he's a decent human being. And a beat later, the Duke shows that he is a decent human being by giving him the satchel of cash that he's been carrying the entire time, which is brilliant. It's just a brilliant bit of screenwriting. And again, an awful lot of that scene was improvised. You know, I know they had the scene, but...
that. Why can't they just stick to the script?
But you know what? If a dude takes with the script and if you can improvise something and it comes out and it's more organic and natural and works better... Take the better take. I love that scene. I love this film. I think it is just wonderful. One of the best films.
5-star film for me. And as I say, it's my top 4 on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
It's the best version of the genre. Like when you think of buddy comedies, you cannot get any better than Midnight Run. It is faultless.
Yeah.
But I didn't pick it for... the reasons that I thought. I've talked about this before. I can't remember where, but I just wanted to not be too obvious.
Well, where the hell are you?
Where am I? I'm at the airport.
And guess who I'm with? I'm with the Duke.
You got him! Oh, you got him, Jack! I love you!
Yeah, you want to say hello?
Yeah, put him on.
Yeah, say hello.
Hello.
Hello, you son of a bitch! We got you,
you son of a bitch!
Yeah, now say goodbye, you lying little piece of shit, because I'm letting them go.
Jack!
In a nice coffee shop. Oh, Jesus. Oh. I don't get it. I did what I wanted to do, John. I got you to L.A. before midnight, so... I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything. No, and you, you'll make me want to put those back on you again. No, John, thank you.
Thank
remember our adventure by.
Jack.
This better be good.
This is good. This is very good.
Go on then, tell me. So, what was your runner-up?
My runner-up is a film that I will watch annually. And I just find it fucking brilliant and hilarious. And we're talking about chemistry, brilliant character chemistry. I think structurally, a very clever film structurally. And it's Step Brothers.
That's my pick.
Fuck off.
That's my pick.
Stop.
Step Brothers.
And oh my God.
Yeah, brilliant. My pick is Step Brothers.
And, yeah, all right. No way. This has never happened before. This has never happened. And it shows we don't share our list beforehand. No. That's no way. All right.
Hey.
All right, everybody. Sleeping arrangements. Brennan, you're going to be sharing a room with Dale. Just until the two of you get jobs and you move out.
Hey, are you awake?
Yeah.
I hate your guts.
As soon as your eyes shut, I'm going to punch you square in the face.
This is the one rule of the house. Don't ever touch my drum set.
Don't touch it!
All right.
Did you touch my drum set?
Nope.
Why are you so sweaty?
I was watching Cops.
I think they're starting to like each other.
What are you doing?
I'm burying you.
I'm alive!
You're waking the neighbors! Shut up!
Tell me why Step Brothers is your pick.
We were talking about Dumb and Dumber and I said naivety and innocence is the thing that makes me laugh the hardest. And that film feels like it should be obnoxious and throwaway. It's two guys in their 40s who are mentally at the age of 12. Yeah. They're both thrown together, Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, who they've got fantastic chemistry. Like, they're hilarious in their own right, but together playing off each other and playing these idiot kids whose parents have married and know they're stepbrothers to one another. It's just like Dumb and Dumber. It's the committing to the bit. It's the wide-eyed stupidity.
Yeah.
But the scene that I picked where I thought, like, there's a few reasons. One is I love midpoints, as I said to you. I love the turning point that happens in a story. This has got a great midpoint.
Favorite non-pornographic magazine to masturbate to? Good housekeeping. If you were a chick, who's the one guy you would sleep with?
John Stamos.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yup.
Do you want to go do karate in the garage?
Yup.
It's a sequence that ends with a joke that it was in the trailer and still in the film. It makes me laugh every single time. And the scene itself has become almost a meme where it's like shorthand between friends.
We're going to share the same pick. Go on. In the same scene. What is it?
Did we just become best friends?
Yes.
So it's the midpoint.
And the bunk beds.
Yeah. It's
yeah. Oh my God. It's the best fucking scene.
They've been at odds the entire time. They've been like rubbing their testicles on their drum kits and trying to bury each other alive. And it's like, shit. It's like he's in the open grave. He's like, no, please don't kill me. But it's the moment where they realize they've got so much more in common. And it's like, did we just become best friends? Then it culminates with them going into their parents and saying, can we build bunk beds?
Yeah,
I don't give a fuck what you do.
Can we turn our beds into bunk beds?
Yes.
Why are you guys so sweaty?
All right, we've already figured out how to do this. The beds match up perfectly.
And here's the thing, it'll give us so much extra space in our room to do activities.
Please say yes.
You don't need permission from us to build bunk beds. You're adults. You can do what you want.
So...
I'm not making myself clear. I don't give a fuck. Now, you both have several interviews tomorrow. I would think you'd be focused on that and not building bunk beds.
It's the case they make because they do it so genuinely.
Room for activities.
It's, It's exactly how my kids come into us and it says, can we, listen, we, and when they all come in together, we've been thinking, we've got a plan, we want to have a sleepover, right? We want to go out camping, and they do it exactly like that. It's so fucking brilliant and
genuine.
It's like,
oh my God, did I hear power tools? It's like, yeah. It's like, no, it's my electric toothbrush.
It's the way John C. Reilly is going, there's so much more room for activities. I can do, it's the way he turns, the way they're just so giddy and excited, and it's, oh God, it's so funny.
It's so specific, and they just nailed it. Like, they just feel like big kids. Like, the mannerisms, the way they talk to each other. But yeah, that scene was in the trailer, and usually whenever a joke is in the trailer, you don't really get the same laugh out of it. He climbs up on top of the pulpit and it immediately just collapses and flattens Will Ferrell. And it, oh my God, I cry laughing every fucking time.
Hey, I never asked you. Yeah. You like guacamole? Oh, Bill! Oh God! Brennan! Brennan! Dad, Nancy, it's bad. It's so bad. There's blood everywhere. The bunk beds were a terrible idea. Why did you let us do that? It's so bad!
When I think of gags in buddy comedies, nothing makes me laugh harder than that scene. And it's like a 7-minute scene. It just keeps building and building. It begins with him, like, he's showing him his katana blade that he got signed by Randy Jackson.
Oh my God. Yeah. What's your favorite song?
And the whole film then flips from them being at odds with each other to now being like thick as thieves. And
see, this is why I think it's a very underappreciated film from a script and story point of view.
Structure is perfect for it.
It does something that you can see a lazier version of this film where it wouldn't start where the film starts. Because the film starts in the opening credits, the film starts with them opposite each other, hating each other. Whereas in a lazier film, it would have taken the entire first act. And at the end of the first act, they would have had them like facing opposite each other. Whereas this takes the leap and says, no, let's just start off. They're meeting each other right at the beginning. And the fact that it flips, you know, about halfway through, as you're saying, at the midpoint, at the intimate moment in the bedroom, the beds collapse together. That's the sex scene of that movie, essentially.
Yeah.
The whole script is flipped. Their dynamic changes completely for the rest of the film.
The reason I zeroed in on it is because I always tell you that, like, for me, it's the table flipping moment. It's the moment when the story turns into something entirely else.
Yeah.
And now the dynamics and all the jokes, everything is brand new. So the story reboots and restarts, and now you're in a whole new, like, space with these characters that you've built up a relationship with. And it gets even more exciting after that,
because
now there's a scheme that they're on.
And like, also what one thing that we didn't point out and one thing I should have brought up earlier is, like, of course, like in any story, there's a worst of the worst moment. And classically, you know, in the buddy cop genre, the buddy comedy at the end of act two, there's a moment where the characters who have kind of come together a little bit, they fracture and you feel like they're never going to be friends again. Like it happens.
But they've got to grow up.
Yeah, it happens in Midnight Run where Robert De Niro double crosses Charles Grodin and it feels like, oh, that was dirty, and they kind of double cross each other really dirty. You're never going to come back from this. In Step Brothers, it happens as well where they are separated and they've forced apart. They truly hate each other and they grow up. And there's a moment where they live their lives as if they're growing up. And it's hilarious. You see them doing their taxes. They have little old ladies, little old granny glasses doing their taxes. They put, one of them has got a Chewbacca head. And he's kind of, it's just seeing these two try and behave like adults in the same way you would see children try and behave like adults. It's fucking hilarious. The act of, I think one of the triumphs of that, one of them goes and buys toilet paper for themselves and it's like this mini grown-up triumph. It's like, it's fucking genius. I have to say, it's a brilliant script. And it's a brilliant film.
It's a story that is so execution-dependent. Like, if you were thinking, who else could play that and not make a complete tit of themselves?
Yeah.
It's like, I remember when Elf came out and Will Ferrell was saying he felt that this was career suicide, that it was so riding the line of making a complete twat of himself and destroying his career point blank, like straight out the gate. And when you watch the trailer, you think that's like a surefire hit. Like, what were you ever worried about? But I think it it's because of his specific genius as a comedian. He's just able to just play. He's able to play a sort of a quizzical, innocent idiot better than anybody. The other guys, which we didn't mention, it's like the great scene in that where he introduces Mark Wahlberg to Eva Mendes, his wife, the old ball and chain. And she walks in and she's stunningly beautiful. And he's like, he's not able to pick up on the irritation that's causing Mark Wahlberg. He's like, shut the fuck up. Who is that? Mm. Like, you couldn't get a better pairing. John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell, they're genius comedic actors.
Yeah. And funnily enough, I'm recommending another podcast right now, but the Film Stories podcast, which I love, just recently did half an episode on Step Brothers, and it's well worth listening to that just to hear all of the just the amount of footage they shot. I think they shot a record amount of film, the most ever in any film ever, more than Apocalypse Now in Step Brothers.
Wow.
Because of all of the improv and all of the stuff they've done. Simon Brew over at the Film Stories podcast, well worth a listen. It's a great podcast.
Well, there you go. That's buddy comedies for you.
Yeah, one of my favorite subgenres.
The two of us, we went on a mission, and I think we've achieved our goal.
Have we changed?
Never.
Have we grown because of this journey together?
Yeah.
And I didn't bring up your beloved Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I actually rewatched that.
Because I don't think that's a buddy comedy. Because the thing with those two guys is the reason why I didn't list it, and I love that film, I absolutely love it, is because they are antagonists all the way through. They never really...
That's true.
They never really have that meeting of minds, and it's more of an arrangement.
Yeah. And 48 Hours, which I started rewatching for this, but didn't actually get as far as Eddie Murphy to be able to add it to my list. But I remember it being the breakout hit buddy comedy films from the early 1980s.
And we didn't really talk about Lethal Weapon because we just did a whole commentary on that and we put it out on the main feed for people to listen to.
That's it. Well done. I think we did a great job covering that. Giving myself and ourselves a pat on the back, even though we rambled and talked shit for most of it.
You've got your hands between my pillows there, Will.
Very good. What are we doing for the next episode?
I put it to Patreon and I said, pick our next topic, because it was going to be a me episode and you were either going to spin the wheel or whatever. And so I said, well, let's just throw it to Patreon. It's going to be episode 69. And Andrew, who's one of our patrons, said, look at the number. It's got to be something oral, so do voiceovers. We didn't get that. The patrons voted, and I can tell you that from the options, there was plot hole, there was voiceover, there was point of view, there was montage, transformation, VFX, stunt. But the winning topic, and the one that we're going to be doing next, is best heist scene.
Oh my goodness. Okay, juicy. That's juicy.
It's where people are coming together to pull off a scheme.
Okay, great.
It's a good topic.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's already making me excited about the homework watch list I have to create, and then start to get stressed out about because I haven't watched half of what I'm supposed to watch.
Listen, we're still doing it, and I'm amazed every time we get an episode recorded, but I enjoyed that. So next episode.
Okay, well, listen, it was great to have you along. Give us a rating on your podcast player of choice. Give us a nice review, if you can give us a nice review. If you want to go as far as becoming a patron, please do. It's less than the price of a coffee.
You get
your bonus shows, the mini bits, which are coming out regularly, and all other stuff that goes beyond. And
the latest
access,
one, you tell us all about your trip to Oklahoma.
Yeah, that was a big epic one. And that was a fun one to chat about. So we get into stuff on the mini bits. The mini bits is like an whole other podcast.
And they're not really mini. They're like...
No, they're not mini. They're the same length as the fucking main show. They're not throwaway. And you can become a part of our Discord community, which, as I was mentioning to Kevin, is... my replacement for social media. It is for me what social media used to be in olden days.
Yeah, the pre-Musk days.
Yep. So come on and join us. Those are your options.
Radio.
Bye.
See.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a Patreon member, where you'll receive bonus shows where we talk about recent releases and what we're up to.
And you'll receive access to our Discord chat room where we hang out with our listeners.
Search the Best Bits podcast on Patreon or click on the link in the show notes.
Weirdly specific themes. And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Baby.
Mini Bits.
I just want to let you know that I love you. More than you could ever know. And I'm here.
Yeah!
To record this show for you, baby. Let's go.
Very good. We're back, Kevin.
We're back.
Hello, how are you? Everything's changed. Everything's changed here.
Yeah, you're in a totally different setup now. It looks to me that you are in a locker room.
I am.
All the lads walking around naked behind you.
For all intents and purposes, this is where I am to give our listeners an idea. I'm recording in Legony Hall, right?
Check out our OnlyFans for footage.
Yes. Legony Hall is one of Ireland's oldest drama societies. I think it was set up in the 20s or 30s, 1920s, so it's nearly 100 years old. And this hall has stood, you know, for about 100 years, but they've added on bits and bits over the years. They kept on adding in bits and pieces. And I'm in the latest edition, which is an extension of the stage and dressing room area. And I am above the IT hub because this is quiet up here. And there's people working downstairs. So this is going to be my home for the next 12 months. It's cozy. I like it.
I like it. It looks like you've got a painted backdrop behind you. It's
not bad seats.
Interesting looking.
Not bad seats at all.
Behind me, there's.
Why do people hang up underpants and stuff? Why don't you just fold them?
But what I'm going to do, what I should do for each episode, because we've got costumes from all the historical plays here.
You're going to keep dressing. We'll have to start doing video episodes then.
Yeah. I'm going to have to start dressing up. Like there's a nurse's uniform right there. Ooh. And fancy frilly outfit over there.
We can play doctors and nurses on mics.
Yeah.
You've got COVID. You've got six months to live.
Yeah. There's loads of props around here as well. So, yeah. So it's inspiring. I would say it's cozy, inspiring. And yeah, it's going to be interesting.
And what about me? You never commented on me.
You look exactly the same, Kevin.
Wow. Well, I took off my pegs, my nipple pegs. And I'm ready.
I noticed there was one little thing different. Yes.
You've been away for a while, so you've got loads to tell me about, all your gossip and your scandal, and I'm dying to hear it. So take it away. Tell us everything.
God.
What went down? You went to Oklahoma.
I did go to Oklahoma. And I also wanted to mention, in case this is in front of another episode, didn't we have a nice little feature appear on the Irish Examiner the weekend?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
That was great.
That was great. What did you think of the picture?
I really liked the picture.
I'm sure you did, because you look great in the picture, whereas they took the one where, do you remember they were getting us to pose and do things? It'd be like, okay, now you be serious and you talk, and now you look into each other's eyes, and now just keep talking away. So the one that they've used makes it look as though I'm singing to you. He's looking at me.
But to be honest with you, when I look at that picture, there is like this, these kind of lights that are kind of hanging over our heads. I don't remember any lights. I was trying to remember
where that was taken, because I don't remember standing against a black backdrop.
I'm wondering, did they just like do some photoshopping on us and like put us...
They did not, because look at the state of me. Face tuner, for fuck's sake.
You look wonderful. You look wonderful. Yes. Yeah, so it was great to get that.
Hang on, let me just plug in the sex moans there.
That had a lovely result in that it bumped us up the charts, didn't it? In whatever podcast charts.
Yeah, in the TV and film category, which is our category that we're sort of ranked in, we went top five. Yes. We were behind the rest is entertainment, Mark Commode and the other fella.
Yeah.
We were ahead of Empire. It's the highest placement we've ever had. So we didn't go number one, as I was saying, I hope we do after this, but we went top five, which is...
Okay. Good results.
And you know what? If you look at that top 10, it's all media company, media company, media company, media company. It's News Talk, it's Bauer Media, it's Goal Hanger. It's all the podcasts that have got like budget and they're making a fucking fortune in advertising. And then there's us in our locker rooms.
Locker rooms and pegs on our nipples and just us and our patrons. on
and
Discord.
Our sound effects board.
That's it. That's wonderful.
No, it was good. But I'm delighted to have that out finally. And do you know what my dad said to me?
What?
I didn't know you won a BAFTA.
No, I was going to say, do you know what my dad said to me? And I was going to say, did he say you're an adopted son?
No, he's told me that before. He tells me that every fucking Sunday at the quiz.
Your dad knows how to stick in the knife, doesn't he?
He does. But it's the way she phrased it. She said award-winning screenwriters. So I'll take it.
And I accepted as well. I'm like going, yes, share it. We're award-winning writers.
I've never won a fucking thing by myself. Not even a scratch card. Do you see the dumb? Not awful.
No, I'll tell you. This is where it all turns. Do you want to start a timer? Put all my juicy goss behind the timer.
Let me just crank it up. And it's off.
Oh, lovely. Oh, yeah, I can feel it. So, Kevin, as you were right, I've had a crazy few months of my life.
You look like shit, so I can't wait to hear.
Thank you. I've felt like shit for quite a while. And honestly, it's...
Do you know what I said, though, on our Discord? I said, I'm only interested in the podcast where the co-hosts can call each other stupid cunts. And that's really our podcast. You don't, when you stop and think about it, there aren't many other podcasts out there where the co-hosts insult each other. But
and get away with it. We do.
It's because we're not all across the table from each other, because we'd be going for each other if we were.
Yeah. You fucking stupid. Mini bits.